namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om 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 namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
This evening we're going to read and discuss from the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita as it is. The last verse, text number 24. This chapter is entitled The Divine and the Demoniac Natures. Grace Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki. One should therefore understand what is duty and what is not duty by the regulations of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may gradually be elevated. Purport. As stated in the 15th chapter, all the rules and regulations of the Vedas are meant for knowing Krishna. If one understands Krishna from the Bhagavad Gita and becomes situated in Krishna consciousness, engaging himself in devotional service, he has reached the highest perfection of knowledge offered by the Vedic literature. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made this process very easy. He asked people to simply chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, and to engage in the devotional service of the Lord and eat the remnants of foodstuffs offered to the deity. One who is directly engaged in all these devotional activities is to be understood as having studied all Vedic literature. He has come to the conclusion perfectly. Of course, for the ordinary persons who are not in Krishna consciousness or who are not engaged in devotional service, what is to be done and what is not to be done must be decided by the injunctions of the Vedas. One should act accordingly without argument. That is called following the principles of Shastra or scripture. Shastra is without the four principal defects that are visible in the conditioned soul: imperfect senses, the propensity for cheating, certainty of committing mistakes, and certainty of being illusioned. These four principal defects in conditioned life disqualify one from putting forth rules and regulations. Therefore, the rules and regulations as described in the Shastra, being above these defects, are accepted without alteration by all the great saints, acharyas, and great souls. In India, there are many parties of spiritual understanding, generally classified as two: the impersonalist and the personalist. Both of them, however, lead their lives according to the principles of the Vedas. Without following the principles of the scriptures, one cannot elevate himself to the perfectional stage. One who actually therefore understands the purport of the Shastras is considered fortunate. In human society, aversion to the principles of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause of all fall downs. That is the greatest offense of human life. Therefore, Maya, the material energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always giving us trouble in the shape of the threefold miseries. This material energy is constituted of the three modes of material nature. One has to raise himself at least to the mode of goodness before the path to understanding the Supreme Lord can be opened. Without raising oneself to the standard of the mode of goodness, one remains in ignorance and passion, which are the cause of demoniac life. Those in the modes of passion and ignorance deride the scriptures, deride the holy man, and deride the proper understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They disobey the injunctions of the spiritual master, and they do not care for the regulations of the scriptures. In spite of hearing the glories of devotional service, they are not attracted. Thus they manufacture their own way of elevation. These are some of the defects of human society which lead to the demoniac status of life. If, however, one is able to be guided by a proper and bona fide spiritual master who can lead one to the path of elevation to the higher stage, then one's life becomes successful. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the 16th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of the divine and demoniac natures. Again, the verse reads, Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karya Viveshtitau Gyatva Shastra Vidhanoktam Karma kartumi harhasi. One should therefore understand what is duty and what is not duty by the regulations of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may be gradually elevated. Mukam kroti bachalam bangam langayate ganim yad kripitanam mande shri gurundina tardanam. So first of all, tasmat shastram pramanam te. The word praman means evidence. The proper evidence by which we are to decide karya, akarya, vyavashtitao. Vyavashtitao means to determine. Karya means what is to be done. Akarya, what is not to be done. Actually, just from this you can understand what is the function of the living entity, the jiva atma. He is called tatashta. Tatashta in Sanskrit means on the borderline. That borderline is between truth and illusion. Or Maya and Krishna, right and wrong. So at every moment in this human form of life, we are faced with choice. At every moment, our senses, our minds are demanding, now what? Now what? Now what? And we have to choose. And this is actually the symptom. This is how you can know that you're alive. This is how you can know you're not dead. You're not dead matter, not just a mechanism. Because there are some who think that what is life? Life is just matter in motion. Just somehow or other, by combination of different dead material elements, there is some entity, some biological structure. And it is moving. And that is life. Well, the thing is, you know, clouds are also moving in the sky. But do clouds decide anything? They're moving. And you can see they go in this direction or that direction. But are they deciding anything? That is the real question. What does it mean for a cloud to move in the wrong direction? Does it have any meaning? Is there some traffic policeman up there who stops a cloud? Yeah, you have gone the wrong way. Now you must pay a fine. No, clouds are just, they're just conglomerations of nebulous water vapor, and they're just being blown along by the wind. So there's no meaning for a cloud to be right and wrong. And then there are those who are, Prabhupada mentions, there are two classes of spiritualists, those who are personalist and those who are impersonalist. So the impersonalist, they believe in some kind of life energy. But that life energy is constitutionally neutral. Actually, in the Western philosophy, they have the same idea as the Mayavadis. The same philosophy, the same conception is there, but they give it a different name. The name is very interesting and very revealing. They call it neutral monism. So monism means that everything is one. And neutral means it has no distinct characteristics at all. And neutral means there's no question of any choice. Some neutral, constitutionally neutral thing. There's no right or wrong for that. No positive, negative, no yes or no. It's neutral. So also, if we were, actually, we might admit that, all right, we're not matter. There is some spiritual existence, but it is neutral, neutral monistic principle. Then again, what does it mean to be right or wrong if you're just a neutral monistic entity? What does it mean to make a choice in life? It doesn't have any meaning at all. Actually, when you think about it, then if you think about it in this way, your mind can't grasp it. Then you realize how absurd these philosophies are. What does it mean for a cloud to be right or wrong? Can't answer the question. What does it mean for a neutral monistic entity to be right or wrong? Can't figure that one out either. But what does it mean for a person to be right or wrong? Oh, that we know. That you know immediately. You don't have to speculate for 1 second. You know immediately what it means for a person to be right or wrong, to make a right or wrong choice. So this immediately distinguishes the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, Vaishnava philosophy, from all these other concoctions. All right, so it's established here. Tasmat shastram pramanam te kriya kyarya vyavashtita. That if we want to know, because our minds and senses are always demanding at every moment, what to do next, make a choice. So if you want to know the right choice, then you have to be guided at every moment by shastra. Shastra, the revealed Vedic scripture, that is your praman, that is your evidence. And if we are acting blindly without, driving on a road, some strange road out in the country, without a road map, you see? So you just drive and speculate, well, maybe I'll go right here, maybe I'll go left here. Very quickly you're lost. So like that, if we conduct our affairs in this vast material world, this ocean of material energy, which is always overwhelming us, we're always bewildered, we're always confused. Everybody knows that, isn't it? And our minds, our senses are confusing us. Just our own mind and senses, what to speak of when we interact with others. Other people come in contact with us and blah, 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 bewilder us. So that's our condition, we're always bewildered. And in that bewildered state, we have to make choices. And if you make the wrong choice, just like on the road, if you go the wrong way, you know, just like you're not far from here, not far from this country, Belgium, or just across the English Channel, there's England. So you may go there on a ferry, you're driving aimlessly, and then you come to a ferry, I guess I'll take the ferry to England, why not? And it takes you across, and then you get off. But you don't know anything about that country. So you're driving, and then suddenly, you know, there's all kinds of cars zipping out of your way, and people are shaking their fists at you, and you drive, what's wrong with these people? What a strange country. Why are they all on the wrong side of the road? And then you turn on the radio and you hear a police report. Beware, there's a madman on the road driving on wrong side of road. Not just one madman, there's so many madmen on the wrong side of the road. So why? Because you don't know. You don't know the law of that place. So therefore what happens? You're stopped by the police and you're in a lot of trouble. And if you say, well, I didn't know, there's no excuse. No excuse. Just like, yes, in our own experience in the material nature, choosing between right and wrong. Even a little child, if a little child chooses wrongly, it's not that material nature says, oh, just a little child. You see? Just like the stove, here's the kitchen. So the stove is cooking away, and a little child doesn't know any better, so little, comes and sees the bright flame, ha ha ha, looks like fun, puts the fingers in the flame. So does Agni Dev say, oh, poor little child, mama didn't teach the child yet about fire, so I won't burn the child today. I'll wait till the child learns what is fire, and then I'll burn. No. The child's fingers are burnt anyway. He cannot plead, I didn't know. So, this is how severe this law of karma is. Whether you know or not know, if you make a wrong choice, you're subject to punishment. So then, based on Shastra, we must make proper choices. But, there's something deeper than this. The key word of this verse is gyatva. Gyatva means knowing. You see, in knowledge, there's different modes of knowledge. So there are persons who want to know, they want to answer the question, what? There's other persons who want to answer the question, how many? But actually, to know, gyatva, to have real knowledge, we must know why. And there's a whole Upanishad dedicated to that, Keno Upanishad. The why Upanishad. Kena means why in Sanskrit. So Srila Prabhupada, he said, this is the actual question that one must answer in the human form of life. Why? If there are rules and regulations that we must follow in making choices in our life, it's not, yes, all right, it is good to know. We should know the what and the how many. But until we know why, we're actually not gyatva. We're actually not in knowledge. We're actually not in knowledge of the purpose of these rules and regulations. Just like you find in Bhagavad Gita, where it is stated the qualifications of a of a Brahmin. Now, a Brahmin is one who is supposed to be perfect in following the rules and regulations. And the first quality in the list, several verses in Gita give a list of brahminical qualities. So the first one is always satyam, means truthful. So Brahmana should be truthful. Always tell the truth. So this sounds very nice moral principle. But you know, there's a story from Vedic literature about a truthful sage. That was his principle. Always tell the truth. But he went to hell for telling the truth. How is that possible? So just listen. He was sitting in his kutir, his hut, and he was doing his brahminical activities, meditation and so on, chanting mantras. And then a very desperate gentleman came rushing up. There was a roadside nearby, so he came running off the road through the bushes and came to his hut and begged the sage, "Please, sir, please, sir." And the sage said, "What is wrong?" "I'm being pursued by dacoits." Dacoits means armed robbers. "They're after me. They want my money. They will kill me if they find me. Please give me a place to hide." "As you go back behind my kutir, you'll see there's some thick bushes. You can hide in there. They won't see you." "Oh, thank you, sir, thank you." So the sage went on, chanting his mantras, doing his mudras and everything. And then coming off the roadside was five bandits with their knives and swords. And they burst in on the sage. "So, holy man, where is this person we're seeking? Do you know where he is? We're pursuing one man to rob him. You know where he is?" So his principle is to tell the truth. "Yes, I know where he is." "So where is he?" "He's in the bushes in the back." So they went around back, they found him and they killed him and they robbed him. So this sage, he was so dedicated to the truth, but actually he did not know why one should be truthful. And because of not knowing why, then the truth, the vow of truth he was following, was like, you know, a computer's truth. You know, a computer also always tells the truth. Whatever you put in there to be computated, it computes and spits out the right answer. But this is all mechanistic truth. Actually, it is just superficial. It again is what. It answers the questions of what and how many. But a computer can never answer the question why. Huh? Why? Why should we tell the truth? What is the truth? Huh? Why is there this principle? What is behind this rule and regulation? So in material consciousness, most people follow a type of truth which is called correspondence in philosophy. Also, there's a Sanskrit term, artivishesha. It means you just say what corresponds to what your senses perceive. And that's the truth. So, you know some, your senses have told you one man is in the bushes. Someone asks you, is he there? You tell. That's the truth. Well, that's what they think. So, but this is very misleading because our senses do not inform us properly of what is actually going on in this world. And just like there's humorous stories from India of one Guru Paramartika. Guru Paramarta. And his five idiot disciples. So Guru Paramarta, he was also teaching a truth. Teaching a truth which was based on sense perception. What you see. So he was walking with his disciples in the forest. And he was teaching them about life. What is life? And like I said in the beginning of the lecture, this idea that matter moves. When matter moves, that's life. So he was adhering to this, because that's what the senses tell us. So he was saying, "Can you see, my dear students, the trees are alive?" And they were looking, "Oh, Guruji, how can you tell the trees are alive?" "Very simple. You must learn this lesson. You see, the trees are moving.
The branches are moving like this. The leaves are moving. You see? Yes, Guruji, they're moving. That's how you know something is alive, when it moves. Oh, very good. So now we know the trees are alive because they move. Yes. So they were very happy. And they walked along a little farther, and then they came to a river. The river also moves. So they were very afraid. Ah, Guruji, you want us to cross this river, but it's moving, it's alive. Yes, you're right, it is moving, it is alive. But, you know, living entities, while although they move, they also sleep. So it is safe to cross the river when the river is sleeping. Oh, so how can we test the river is sleeping? One disciple, he had a great idea. I think I know. So he got a piece of wood and he lit the end of it on fire. And then he crept up to the river with his burning stick of wood. And then he put it in the water. And of course, because it was burning, then it made a big hissing sound. And steam came up and they all, the river is awake. It's very angry. You saw it hissed at us like that. So we dare not cross now. So then later on, they were waiting, and then they saw a man on horse come. He was from the other side, and he just came across on the horse, and there was no problem. So then Guruji said, now the river must be asleep. So let us cross. So they very carefully crossed, and they got to the other side. And then Guruji was worried. These big living entities like river, you know, they're very tricky. They're very voracious, you can never trust them. So we must know if we're all here. And one disciple said, yes, you know, I know this river is very tricky because when I was a little boy, my grandfather, he crossed this river also with his donkey. And on the donkey there was loaded 4 bags of salt in cloth bags, you know. And when he crossed that river, then when he came out the other side, the bags of salt were empty. The river stole the salt. So he might have stolen one of us too. Yes, so we must verify. So how many were there in our party? There were 6, I think. 5 disciples and 1 guru. That makes 6, yes. So then Guru Paramati said, all right, then I'll count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Someone's missing. And one disciple said, I'll count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, no. And they were all counting. Someone in the river took one of us. And then they began to cry. One of our party is gone. Who was it? I don't know. But one of them is gone. There's only 5. We counted. So there was one pilgrim who was coming by. He was intelligent. And he observed all this. And he was a little low on money. So he thought, now I'll make some money today. So he said, wait a minute, Guruji, disciples, just a moment. I am an exorcist. I know how to force this river to return the one who's lost. But for this I want 45 gold coins. Oh, all right, then they counted up. So we'll give you 45 gold coins if you can bring back our number 6 man. Yes. So he had them all. He said, now you must meditate. You must meditate, and there's a special asana I want to teach you. You have to bend over and hold your knees like that, and close your eyes. Stand with your hands on your knees, close your eyes, bend over. All right, and all stand in a line. So they did that. Then he went behind them, and each one, then he said, so when you feel something, I'm going to do my mystic power, and when you feel something, you shout a number, beginning with 1, then 2, 3, all right? Yes. So then he gave each one a big kick in the backside. Boom! And the first one went, 1, and then 2, 3, up to 6. Oh, give him the money. You're wonderful. Now there's 6 of us again. How nice. So what was the problem? The problem was that they were only counting what they could see. They could not see themselves when they were counting. Everyone was counting, but only the 5 that he could see, not considering himself. So this, of course, these stories are simple stories which are taught children in Gurukul just to teach them the rudiments of philosophy. You know, there's 6 systems of philosophy. So these stories point out the fault. So this is the fault of Sankhya philosophy. Everything, because Sankhya means to count. So they think that they can count up everything in creation. But they miss something, and that is the self, the soul. You cannot see the soul. So this is a simple lesson. They were counting, but they were always missing one. So similarly, the scientists, the modern-day Sankhya philosophers, they always miss the soul. So that's the correspondence idea, correspondence theory of truth. And then there's another theory, for those who are more speculative, called the coherence theory, where they try to bring the whole world under their logic, you see, their logical speculation. Everything they see, rather than accept it as it is, they try to bring it under some theory that they've concocted in their own mind. So there was one logician who was going to visit a miller who was grinding wheat to make flour. And so he went to this miller and he saw the miller's arrangement. The miller had the millstone, a big millstone, and there was a bull that was walking in a circle. And so when he came and ordered a bag of flour, so the miller said, all right, just a moment. And he went and he got some grains. And then he went to the millstone and placed them between the stones. And then he gave the bull a whack on the backside with a bamboo stick. And the bull began to walk along. And as the bull was walking, he had a very big bell on his neck. So he's walking, dong, 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 the bell was ringing. Meanwhile, the miller went off. He was doing some other business elsewhere. And so the logician was watching all this. Very interesting. The bull was walking, dong, 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 dong. And after a few minutes, the miller came back and he stopped the bull and he scraped the flour off the stone and placed it in a bag. And here's your bag, sir. And the logician, he said, I have a question for you. And the miller said, you have a question for me? I'm just a very simple man. You're a big logician. What could I answer? You know, you're so intelligent. No, this is a question about your own business. Oh, all right. So I just want to know why you keep this bell on this bull's neck. And the man answered, very simple, yes, because I have the bull grind the flour. I give him a knock on the backside, and I can go elsewhere. And as long as I hear the bell going dong, 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 I know he's walking in a circle. So then I can work. If I ever hear it stop, then I will come and give him another tap on the backside, get him going again. So that is why I have the bell, so that I can do other things. I know he's working. And the logician said, but what if this bull, when you went away, what if he were to stop and just shake his neck like this? Dong, dong, dong. And the farmer smiled and said, he would never do that because he's not a logician like you. He's just a bull. So the theoreticians, the logicians, they look at everything in the world and they try to fit them in some kind of theory, but, you know, things exist in their own right, not according to our idea. So he was considering, because he is a logician, that the bull will think also like a logician. But a bull is just a bull. So this is Atmavan Manyate Jagat, this principle Prabhupada said. That the speculators, their tendency is to see the whole universe, the Jagat, Atmavan, in the way that they, Atmavan means their own, according to their own idea, own value, Manyate, their own conception. So both of these conceptions of truth are not true. Because the truth is transcendental. The truth is absolute. If something is true, then it must be absolutely true. Absolute means at all times, all places, all circumstances. Absolute means in every case. It's like he's mentioned, the modes of material nature. So, what is the truth in the mode of goodness is not the same as the truth, so-called, in the mode of passion or the mode of ignorance. A person in the mode of ignorance, you ask him, what is the right way of life? What is the right thing for the human being to do? And he'll give a very different answer than a person in the mode of goodness. You know, you can go down to the train station here in Antwerp and find one of these characters. Scruffy-looking characters. And you ask him, "Dear sir, what is the right thing for a person to do?" And he will say, "Well, the right thing is to wait here in the train station for travelers coming by who are not very attentive." And then you steal their luggage as quickly as you can and run off. Or another one might say, you wait for people who look like they have money, and then you offer them these drugs I have in my pocket. Or someone else will say, the right thing to do is to look for a drug dealer and buy drugs for him. This is the best thing in life. So they'll give answers like that, which are radically different from the answers someone in the mode of goodness would give. So these are relativities. But what is the absolute truth? What is the truth which is always true? In all times, places, and circumstances. And that truth is Krishna. That is the why behind everything. Gyatva shastra virhanoktam karma kartami harasi. So gyatva, this knowing. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may gradually be elevated. Yes. Why follow the rules and regulations? You'll be elevated. But elevated to what? That you must know. We must know Krishna. Smartavya satatam vishnur vismartuna jatta chit sarva vidhi nishedishur ityureva kinkara. All the rules and regulations and the shastras, when they are gathered together authoritatively by those who actually know the real purpose of the shastras, like the six Srila Rupa Goswami, for instance, then he has said, what is all of these rules and regulations? They come together to form just two. There's just two. Always remember Krishna, never forget him. That's all. And if one does this, if one always remembers Krishna, then one fulfills all rules and regulations, even if one is very sinful and fallen. By always remembering Krishna, by following that rule and regulation, then one will actually become perfect in all the rules and regulations. And for that, to illustrate this, Srila Prabhupada told about one thief, a professional thief, who happened to hear a person reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this Bhagavatam reciter was speaking about a small blue boy who lives in a place called Vrindavan. And he was describing from the Bhagavatam the glories of this blue boy, how beautiful he is, and also that he's decorated with jeweled and golden ornaments all over. His mother, Yashoda Devi, she's every day decorating him with thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars worth of jewels and gold. So the thief, he was just kind of, there was nothing else to do, so he's listening. Oh, Krishna, Vrindavan, what is that? I don't know. But then when he heard jewels, gold, so then he began to ask questions. So you said this little boy lives in Vrindavan. Yeah, yes. I can see you're a great soul. You're interested in Krishna. Yes, I'm very interested in Krishna. Where is this Vrindavan? So then he described, yes, Vrindavan is a place here in India. You can find it. He gave directions. But to actually enter the real Vrindavan, one must always be thinking of Krishna. Constantly. Yes, I am always thinking of Krishna. After hearing about what you've said, he's got on his body. He didn't say that so loud, under his breath. I'm always thinking of that Krishna because I want to get those jewels. And you say he's the son of Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. Yes. So then he went a long journey, but he finally reached Vrindavan. And there he was looking, and he was inquiring from everyone, where is Krishna? Do you know the house of Nanda Maharaj? Do you know where Mother Yashoda is? And they were thinking, everyone was thinking, oh, such a great devotee. He's so eager. We've not seen anyone has come so eager to find, where is Krishna? Do you know the little blue boy with all the ornaments? Yes, we know Krishna. You want to see him? Yes, I want to see him. Oh, Saduji, you are so... And he was wondering, why? I want to find out this boy's address, and they're always going like this to me. What kind of people live here in this town? So his meditation this way increased more and more, because the people, they were confirming that Krishna lives there, but they were not telling him where. As soon as he would ask, but tell me where I can see him, they would go, oh, you're a great soul. You have such laulyam, eagerness to see Krishna. Yes, I'm eager to see Krishna. Tell me where he is. Oh, Sadhuji. So in this way, he was wandering through Vrindavan. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And then, finally, because his eagerness became so intense, it reached a level which is called anusmriti, which is intensified remembrance of the Lord. And at this anusmriti stage of meditation, this is the beginning of bhava. So just now, he was a thief. He's a thief. He had no guru. He was not following any regulative principles. But because of this lusty desire to steal, but it was associated with Krishna, his meditation on Krishna, his remembrance of Krishna became so intense, so concentrated, that it brought him up to the bhava platform. Now, bhava platform, that's when one's spiritual senses become awakened. And then one actually can see Krishna. Krishna is always there in Vrindavan, but one must be on the bhava platform to see him. So he came to this bhava platform. And then all at once, he was looking, and there he saw Krishna. Krishna was playing in the dust and smiling, little boy. And he saw on Krishna's body all those gold ornaments and jewels. And then he was so happy to see Krishna. Krishna, finally, I see you now. Then he came to Krishna. Now, Krishna, you have so many nice bangles and ornaments on your body. Can you not just give me a few? I've come a long way just for these. And Krishna said, no. Why not, Krishna? You have so many. No, my mother puts them on me. She will be mad if I come back and they're missing. Oh, Krishna, come on. Your mother and father, I've heard, they have so much opulence. They'll not miss a few gold ornaments, a few jewels. No. So then he was reaching out to grab Krishna, and Krishna was laughing and running away, and then he was running after Krishna. Running, and Krishna was leading him through the forest of Vrindavan. And he was becoming mad and madder to see Krishna, and then his ecstasy increased even to the prema platform. And at that point he forgot all about the jewels. And then Krishna smiled at him and disappeared. And then he was left with a broken heart. Where is Krishna? Now I have understood. I've actually understood what is the point of my journey to Vrindavan, the real point of my seeking of Krishna. And I was so fortunate, Krishna was so kind to me that he revealed himself. But I was so blinded by my lusty desire, I did not realize my fortune until now he's disappeared. And so he entered into this devastated mood of Vipralamba. But at this point he was pure devotee. So you see, this story was told by Prabhupada. So this illustrates how smart Divya. If we always remember this anusmriti, the same, smarta means to remember, smriti, anusmriti, concentrated memory. So if one simply always remembers Krishna and never forgets him, then one will automatically, one immediately comes to the pure platform. Despite of all of one's past sins and disqualifications and bad habits, whatever. So this all sounds very nice, and now we all think, yes, okay, now we know what to do. We just always must remember Krishna. But that's not so easy. That's not so easy. Because the mind, as we hear from Bhagavad Gita, is very restless and uncontrollable, just like the wind. So therefore, there is necessity of following rules and regulations. The Vedic rules and regulations, of course, they can be followed for different purposes. I was mentioning there's different philosophers, like the Sankhyas, Sankhyites, and the Nyayis, the logicians, and the Karma Mimamsakas, and so on and so forth. The different classes of philosophers in Vedic culture. So their understanding of the truth is not Krishna. Still they follow the rules and regulations. But they do not know why. That's the point. Because they're averse to Krishna consciousness. So they follow for other purposes, and some of them attain the heavenly planets as a result of their following. Some of them attain merging into impersonal Brahman because they followed. But because they actually do not know the reason why one should follow, they never attain Krishna. So this is where a devotee starts. A devotee starts with knowing why. We are, as Krishna explains, we are all His eternal parts and parcels, His eternal servants. We are meant for going back home, back to Godhead. We're meant for serving Him in the spiritual world in loving ecstasy. And because our minds are so restless and uncontrollable, although we would certainly like to, we certainly would like to always remember Krishna and never forget Him. Our minds are so devious and so rascal, just like the wind. How can you catch the wind? Huh? How will you catch the wind? You go out with some big net or some big blanket and try. It's impossible to catch the wind. So the mind is like that. You cannot, by any physical endeavor, capture this mind. But if we follow the rules and regulations with the intention of serving Krishna, with the intention of regulating the mind, so that gradually the mind will be able to attach itself to Krishna more and more and never forget Him, and then we get Krishna's mercy. It is stated, Ataksi Krishna Namani Na Bhavyat Graya Mindri. Actually, Krishna is always out of the reach of our senses and mind. But Sevan Mukhi Jivado Svayameva Sparatyada. But if we serve Krishna, if we regulate our senses according to the Vedic Shastra, Karya Karya Vyavashtita, you follow the do's and don'ts of the Vedic scriptures, but for serving Krishna, then this attempt satisfies Krishna. Then svayameva sparatyada. Then on his own initiative, it is actually not, it's not even because we followed the rules and regulations so nicely that somehow by that means we captured Krishna. No, not even that. That is another kind of foolishness. Like there's a foolishness, niyamagraha, niyamagraha. So one kind rejects the rules and regulations, doesn't follow them, becomes a nonsense. And another kind follows very, very rigidly, but blindly. You see, just Prabhupada says, just follows for the sake of following. And that means pride. That means thinking I'm very, you know, pure person because I follow and these others don't follow their nonsense. He just becomes puffed up. So it's not simply by following that Krishna becomes captivated by our minds. It's not like that. But if we follow these Vedic injunctions, which Krishna Himself has given, and we follow with the intention of serving Krishna, then Krishna, He becomes pleased with us. He becomes pleased by that attempt. And then on His own initiative, when He finds that we are now ready, we are now worthy, and then He reveals Himself to us. As Srila Prabhupada said, first you must deserve. For those who want to see Krishna like that thief. But that is not the way. The thief was a very special personality. There are sometimes mentioned in the Shastra such persons, but the thief is not our acharya. He's not. We can simply offer our respects that this thief was so fortunate. But just like sometimes people without any previous educational qualification, they were high school dropouts, they were very simple people. But due to some extraordinary event in their life, just like here's some simple guy selling newspapers on the street. But there's a horrible accident in the street. A bus and a taxi cab smash together and burst into flames, and people are trapped inside the bus. And the simple newspaper seller, he runs up and rips open the door and pulls all the people out, risking his own life. And he becomes a hero. He was a newspaper seller. Can hardly write his own name. But now he's a hero. He saved 28 people on the bus. And so the king of Belgium comes and puts a big medal around his neck. And then the University of Brussels, they invite him and they give him a doctor's diploma. He's just a simple guy. And now he's got a doctor's diploma. So, but we cannot make a plan. We cannot say, oh yeah, he's a good example for me. So I'll just stand on the street in downtown Antwerp and wait also to see a bus collide with a taxi, and then I'll also become PhD. No, that's not a good plan to become educated. Sometimes it happens, and you deserve Krishna's mercy. And then Prabhupada said, then you can desire. Then you can desire to see Krishna once you're in the position of deserving his mercy. But before you deserve, until we have situated ourselves in bhakti, according to the sadhana vidhi, the rules and regulations of scriptures, the following of the regulatory principles, the chanting of the prescribed number of rounds, the performance of seva, Krishna seva, until we've established ourselves in that, then if we try to desire to see Krishna in some bush, then Maya will provide that Krishna, so-called. Maya will trick us. Because Prabhupada said Maya's business is to test. There's so many people who've heard something about Krishna, they want to see Krishna, they want to know Krishna, they want to go back to Godhead by some easy way called sahajya. But Prabhupada said, Maya, her duty is to see that no rascal bothers Krishna. Mm-hmm. Because Krishna, the spiritual world, is just for his enjoyment. So that is a qualification. That is a qualification. Prabhupada said, when you become qualified, you get a certificate. And he actually said like this, I'm just repeating. You get a certificate, like a stamped ticket, that you can enter the spiritual world. And that ticket is testifying that here is a living entity whose only interest is to satisfy Krishna, has no other interest. For that you get this ticket, and then you can go. But as long as we're interested in ourselves, we're interested in Krishna consciousness, but it is a self-centered interest. And then that bothers Krishna. So Prabhupada said, Maya, her business is to stop anyone from entering the spiritual world who has self-centered desires. So, that is why this sadhana bhakti, vaidhi bhakti process is so important, because by this regulation gradually, because Prabhupada said, what does it mean to accept this rule and regulation? It means to accept discipline. Discipline means you do something that you yourself would not normally do. And normally, we don't like to rise very early in the morning. Normally, we don't like to be very regulated, very clean. We don't like to apply ourselves to spiritual discipline. This is not what we like to do by our habit, bad habit in this material world. So as long as we continue to indulge these habits, then you must remain in this material world. Maya, she'll arrange that for you. As I said this morning, Krishna is in the heart, observing everything we do. And Prakriti, the material energy, is also there, because she is his Shakti. So she's also there in the heart, in our heart too. Why do you think this body is here? Because she's arranged that around the heart, which is the seat of the soul. And so Lord Krishna is looking, he sees crystal clear all the desires of the living entity. And then he turns to Prakriti and says, as I'm just quoting Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, he wants the body of a dog. Give him the body of a dog. And Mahadev goes, all right. Shazam. Then you get the body of a dog. So as long as we have these selfish desires, then we will just continue to accept body, material body after material body after material body. And that is the result of indulging our own whims. That warning is there. Vartate kamakarata, in the verse before. As long as that is our business, to satisfy our own whimsical desire, to follow our mind, then this will be our relationship with Krishna. Then he's turning to the material energy. Just see this desire, satisfy it. And so Maya is continually satisfying these desires. So one has to become trained in the sadhana bhakti, doing what Krishna wants us to do. So sadhana bhakti simply means it starts on the platform where you do what you can do for Krishna. Sadhana bhakti, some people criticize sadhana bhakti, this is the lower platform. Yeah, but you are on the lower platform. So on this lower platform which you now are on, by following these rules and regulations, you can do what Krishna wants you to do. And then when you become trained in that, satisfying Krishna on this level, yes, then there is the spontaneous level. But first of all, we have to get in this habit, this good habit of doing what Krishna wants us to do. And that is why we must follow the rules and regulations. So I'll stop here. Are there any questions? Yes?
How do we know that we will be following Vaidhi Bhakti for some time? And then gradually after a few years you think, I did very strictly for 3-4 years Vaidhi Bhakti, so now I feel I should come to the spontaneous platform.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, you should.
So how do we know that we can make the step?
It's all very nicely presented to us. You see, the one thing we must understand is that Krishna consciousness is coming by avaroha panta. That means descending. It's descending. It's not something that we reach up for, like the fox jumping for the grapes and never getting them and then becoming frustrated. It doesn't work anyway. It is coming down by mercy. So the spontaneity, it's being delivered to us by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Pancha Tattva. So Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nahiyanya, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is none other than Radha and Krishna. So Radha and Krishna, as you can see here, is Radha and Krishna in this picture, and there is depicted their transcendental loving pastimes, Madhura Leela. So this is the when the spontaneous loving attraction, spontaneous devotional service, Raganuga, bhava bhakti awakens in the heart, then one's purified emotions, purified transcendental emotions, draws one into these pastimes. So, but our desires are not purified. So how shall they become purified? That is the question. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us the process. And that process is the Sankirtan mission. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with his associates, Pancha Tattva, in Navadvip Dham is identical to the Leela of Shri Radha and Krishna in Brajadham, in Vrindavan. They're actually the same. But this one, you cannot go. You cannot go from Maastricht to Goloka Vrindavan. You have to go to Mayapur. You have to go to Navadvip. Or you have to go to the mission, the preaching mission. Wherever Lord Chaitanya has expanded in the world, by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, it has also come to Maastricht. Or everywhere around the world. So you must join Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan party. And this spontaneous attraction means that one becomes spontaneously inclined to Sankirtan. In the beginning, you're told, Sankirtan leader says, okay, Prabhu, time to go out. And especially weather like this. Even to make Harinam. So we're not so inclined. So that then from that you know you're a neophyte platform. Because this is the Leela. You are invited. Lord Chaitanya, this Leela is called Audarya Leela. It is munificent. Everyone is welcome. This is exclusive Leela. Huh? This is exclusive Leela. Only for those who are the topmost transcendentalists. They may go there. But this one, everyone, doesn't matter. You are fish eater, you are dog eater. Come on, come on. Chant Hare Krishna. So everyone has access. But as long as we are, you know, dragging our feet, as long as we are slow, as long as we are reluctant, oh, it's too much trouble, too difficult, too demanding, too heavy, then you can know, you're doing, that's nice, but you can know you're still on the neophyte platform. So, therefore Srila Prabhupada says you must become practiced, you must become habituated to follow the rules and regulations. As Srila Prabhupada said, I just read today, he gave the example of a boy going to school. So everyone who's a parent, who's ever had a child who went to school, you know, when the child first have to go, they're very unruly. They don't like. And when they're in the school, they don't even know what to do. And they just make a disturbance just by their not knowing anything. And then they're often rebellious when the teacher tries to show them what to do. But as Prabhupada said, that when they get used to it, then finally they behave properly. After a little while, then they come in when the bell rings and they sit down at the desk and they open the book. And the teacher doesn't have to tell them each step, now come in, now sit down, now open the book. They do it because they have learned. So that is the more advanced platform. When one is spontaneously engaged in the Sankirtan mission, he doesn't have to be pushed from behind. Rather, he's pushing himself because he likes it. He wants to do more and more and more. Harinam, book distribution, preaching, prasad distribution. He wants to see the mission of Srila Prabhupada, the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spread more and more. He wants to see more and more fortunate souls with their hands upraised, big smiles, chanting, jumping up and down, like Jack in the Box. When seeing these sights make him very happy, and he wants to see it more and more, so then he's becoming advanced. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, well, he is, as I said, Radha Krishna Nahiyanya. He is the same Radha and Krishna. So when he sees this eagerness reach a peak point, this eagerness to perform Sankirtan reach a peak point, then he reveals himself as Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. So then one actually is in both pastimes. It's not that one goes from there to there, but actually one is simultaneously in both. That is the, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that is the great mystery of Chaitanya Leela, that both are going on simultaneously, and devotees are in both positions. There is a scripture called Gar Gonadesha Deepika, which is, Deepika means the light by which you can see the identity of the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this scripture by, what is his name? Kavi Karnapur, yes, Kavi Karnapur. So that scripture reveals the Vrindavan identity of all the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So you can know every one of Lord Chaitanya's associates, who he is in Goloka Vrindavan, which gopi, which gopa, and so on. So simultaneously they're in both realms of devotional service. Okay. So it is now 9 o'clock, since we have to follow the rules and regulations. We shall not go on later, because prasad is next, yes. So you need time to take the prasad. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.